folks. Welcome back to Non-Toxic Environments. This is Andy Pace. This week is a special week for me. I get to interview one of my friends and mentors, colleagues in the industry, Caroline Blazovsky. Caroline is America's healthy home expert. And today she is going to talk to Jay and I about a number of important things that she deals with. But I think for me, it's the introduction of mitigating moisture issues in the home, not only to reduce mold, but to reduce chemical exposure. And you'll hear from Caroline in just a moment. Just to give you a little background on Caroline for those who don't know her, Caroline is a nationally recognized home health expert and entrepreneur. She has been featured on dozens of television shows. She produces her own weekly radio show all about home repair and doing it healthy. She is the CEO and founder of My Healthy Home. It's a company specializing in creating healthy living environments and improving health and wellness. And she, among many of the things that she does right now, she's actually blazing a new trail in the indoor air quality realm as it relates to purification systems and really tackling the SARS-CoV virus just head on with this new purification system. So, like I said before, today we're going to hear from Caroline to talk about what she does in her business, and we're going to learn a little bit about her, not only from a professional standpoint, but from a human standpoint. And we had a great conversation, Caroline, Jay, and I, and kind of got off on a tangent for a while talking about music and other things, but it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun to do, and I hope you appreciate Caroline and everything she has to say. Again, wealth of knowledge, and I'm so excited to bring you this talk today. So here we go. So Caroline, I spent quite a bit of time giving our audience a history of your bio and, you know, what you do and so forth. I mean, it's an incredibly impressive list of accomplishments you've had over your career. Thank you. But I've got to say that since you and I have been working together on some projects, you've really opened my eyes to the whole concept of moisture control. And you know, indoor air quality has always been a big thing for me because of the chemical sensitivity issue. But moisture control has been such a huge thing now. And we're finding this throughout the country. It's more and more problematic. And you know, maybe I should probably table that for a little bit later. can you tell the audience what got you into this so many years ago? And what was the push to really focus on indoor air quality and healthy homes?
I wish that answer was like so simple, but I think I just have that nature where I want to know an in-depth, like I want to know details about something. It doesn't matter what it is. I kind of want, if I'm interested in it, right? Like us all, some things we don't care about, but the minute we are interested in something, then it kind of becomes like, I got to know everything. So I think that it started, I worked in New York City for a very long time. And I think it was a combination, right? It was a combination of, I didn't see myself as a 9-to-5, or I worked, you know, very long hours. I worked in the production industry. So I worked in media. Actually, my first internship and job was at the Howard Stern Show in New York. So how crazy is that?
Jeez. Yeah.
And so, you know, I saw myself working really long hours in production, and on the show, we can all relate to this, right? Because here we are back in the saddle, and it kind of took me full circle, which is strange because now we have a podcast as well and a radio show. So, you know, I started in that, and I just didn't see myself in that 9-to-12 range every day, going to work, coming home, working in New York City. And then on top of it, I developed some kind of environmental allergy when I was in New York, and it sort of propelled me to figure out like, well, what's going on? Why do I have this? I never had this before. Why do I have this now? And then that started the beginning of the end. And I just didn't, you know, I didn't want to take a pill, and I wanted to find out what was behind it. So it was that simple. And then it just, I started learning about mold when nobody was doing mold back in the day. I mean, people looked at me like I had 12 heads and I'm like, look, I really think that if you have mold in your house, it's making you sick. And we did Petri dish testing back there. Like there was no indoor air quality assessments and coming in and having an IAQ professional environmental consultant. That didn't exist. Like I feel so archaic when I talk about it because I'm like an old lady, you know, but it didn't exist. We did Petri dishes. We used to put them out in spaces and then we would send them to a lab and see if stuff grew on them. It was crazy.
Right.
And when I think about the industry, and I like doing talks like this because we talk about like how we've evolved. I mean, right. Andy, we are in such a different place than we were 20 years ago, right? I mean, one, the products are getting worse. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can attest to that. So we've got all this junk that's coming into a house where we didn't have those things. Maybe you had some wood siding and you had some plaster and you had lathe and you had steam heat and it was very basic and simple, very healthy and simple, but simple. Right. Now, with all of these manufactured products, which you and I know are no good, you know, mm-hmm. We're in a whole different ball game as to this industry and what it means for us. So in a nutshell, that's how it all started. And then it's just progressed to the umpth degree. And you know, it just gets more and more for us as to what we have to deal with.
You know, it's interesting because I did a show just a couple of weeks ago. We have a lot of new listeners in the last 6 months. And I wanted to give everybody a background again of why I'm in this business, why I do what I do. And when you say we've been in this for such a long time, I've been in it for such a long time that for the first 5 years in business, I sent out a mail order catalog to people. So we didn't have the internet. You know, if I wanted to research a company to do lab testing, I would have to go to the library and look at the Thomas Register and find a company in my area that did that stuff.
Remember Microfish? You remember?
Oh my gosh. Yes. I used to have
ourselves.
I used to have what they call the Dodge scan machine with a little micro rolls for plans. And I'll say today, that's why my vision went from 20/20 eagle eye vision to having lousy vision because I was reading microfilm of blueprints for several years. Anyway, so
it's amazing. Like in that way, right? It's made our job so much easier.
Yes.
Because you know, I don't even know how. You don't want to hear a funny story? My significant other, his sister's sister-in-law's, you know, his how do I say it? His her husband's parents actually mold tested with me back before we ever had any of this. And we found old records. Like we went back, like nobody knew this. Right. And I said, this is weird. I was looking at the last name. I'm like, this is a weird last name. Is this related to your sister? And he goes, oh my God. He goes, that's my sister's, you know, in-laws. He goes, you tested their house back in whenever. And I'm like, oh my God, that's crazy. And it was, he's like, how did they even find you back then? I said, it was like you had ads in papers and you,
right.
You know, people said mold testing. Do you feel toxic in your home? What's wrong? And I mean, it's crazy to think where we've come from. It really is.
It is. And Jay, think about, you know, in 1992, 93, when I first started working with AFM, you know, how did people find your company? Right.
Isn't it amazing?
There was no internet in 1992, 93.
It was word of mouth.
It
was word of mouth. Right? Everyone heard from someone about something that was going on out in California. This old guy out in California was doing something. So they kind of found their way to us by making phone calls and probably writing letters, snail mail letters.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You know, all of that kind of thing. But you know, that's what's that, you know, that word of mouth can spread very, very quickly, especially, you know, and we know we work with a group of people where they all are kind of connected to each other mm-hmm. in some way. And as soon as the word hits, it's like it goes viral. Well, it didn't go viral then. There was no such thing as viral, but it, you know, through the old channels, people started talking to one another and that's, you know, that's how they became aware of what we were doing. So,
well, people would write a story. Somebody would write a story for the Canary newsletter.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know,
remember Toxic Times? Remember Toxic Times?
Yes. Yep. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
If you
that
pull
was
out
a big one.
you pull out an old issue of that, you'll see me impersonating a doctor in an ad.
That's right. That's
I got, right. got a stethoscope and I put on a lab coat and, you know, right. I held up a can of Safeco paint and I said, here's the deal.
All right. So, awesome. the real cool thing now is you both mentioned this, this word of mouth advertising mm-hmm. And you tell family and friends, this is what podcasting is now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 100%.
Quite honestly, out of all the podcast listeners we have, the large audience that we have, I get more and more emails from customers saying that we just love the show because it sounds like I'm just talking to my neighbor or a friend. Mm-hmm. And you can't get that. I don't think you can get that with any other media right now that we deal with.
And we have to tell them something too, right? It's yeah. when we meet, right? So we are on this podcast and we're looking at each other. We're getting to have experiences with each other that the audience doesn't understand, right? We get, as colleagues, we get to work together, see each other, talk, and it gives us a time to do that. And I think it's more, you know, it's more about us connecting too and just, you know, talking about projects and things. So I find it really interesting. It's kind of like having a business meeting, but we have fun.
Right.
So
right.
Well, no I believe, I think the best conversations are the ones that include stories. And, you know, after all our combined years of being in the business, I think we've got a whole lot of stories that are really interesting. And people, we like to hear stories. I mean,
of course,
that's what we like. We like to hear real world things that happened. How did we deal with it? How hard was it? How easy was it? And all the different things that are involved in a project. And, you know, that's what I like to listen to anyway.
and there have been a lot of those, that's for sure. So you and I worked together on a couple of clients' homes we both dealt with. And, you know, it seems like when a client gets to be to a certain level where I can't help anymore. I said, all right, you gotta call Caroline because she's
thanks, Andy.
No, I'm not pushing off the problem customers. I am allowing my customers to speak to somebody more knowledgeable than I am on those subjects for sure.
And even not more knowledgeable because I think we're very comparable, right? It's a matter of sometimes just having a different perspective to look at it. Right. You just get, you know, sometimes you just get lost in your own, you know, specialty and right. it helps just to bring people in and for you and I to talk about it too and say, okay, what do you think? Mm-hmm. And that's the best way to come up with a solution.
Well, and so to that point, as I was talking about when I first came on the show here is I really learned an awful lot about moisture remediation and moisture elimination. And I started doing some studies on my own with the frat testing we do. And frat testing mm-hmm. is formaldehyde release attenuation test. Essentially, I can read any surface in a house, carpet, wall, cabinet, you name it, and I can pinpoint exactly which surface of the home is releasing formaldehyde at what levels.
That's fantastic.
About a year ago, or 2 years ago, I was doing working on a home here in Wisconsin. A customer complained about the carpeting, and her carpet's 28 years old, but it was still off-gassing well in the toxic levels of formaldehyde.
Yeah.
And because of what I learned from you and listening to your shows, I had her do an experiment for me, you know, because she would open up the windows, air out the house and so forth. I said, I want you to close the windows, turn on the air conditioning, rent a dehumidifier, mm-hmm. dehumidify the space. I mean, get it to the point where it's 35% in the house and keep it at that space for 2 weeks. And I'm going to come back. I had her do that, and I came back and I tested her carpet, and the formaldehyde off-gassing was exactly half of what it used to be.
It's wild, isn't it?
It's wild. And so I started doing more and more research into this, and I learned this, and I don't know where I picked this up, but when moisture comes off of a surface, when water comes off of a surface, and Jay knows this because we experience things with some AFM products called flushing. When you get evaporate coming off of a surface, it'll carry with it the strong aroma of where it was. You know, think of water coming off a piece of wood. It smells like wood times 10.
Times 10, of course, absolutely.
And so we found that when water evaporates off of a surface, it'll actually carry with it the chemical footprint of where it was. And so when we reduce humidity and we keep it at that low level for a period of time and allows materials to dry out, now I do the testing and I find that the off-gassing is a fraction of what it was.
That's fantastic. And you know where this is relevant too, is that all this new building construction with this laminated, you know, whether you're looking at OSB, right, oriented strand board or MDF or even plywood substrates and flooring and things like that, when these places get humid, so if you build a house in an area where it's just damp and there's nothing you can do, all of a sudden people start to feel sick and they start to complain and you start to smell. I mean, I can smell an MDF house as soon as I walk into something that's got oriented strand board. I mean, I smell it. I couldn't live in a house that had it. I don't like it. So you walk in, but if it's a damper house, like you're saying, you're going to just smell it so much in such a stronger level. And then of course, you know, it's outgassing at a higher potential. So yeah, 100%.
Then it's how do you convince the construction team to take care of that before it's too late? And that's where I find a real pushback from the build team, because you know they don't want to turn the HVAC on until the house is almost done.
Yeah.
Even though every flooring manufacturer, cabinet manufacturer, the paint companies will all tell you you need to have your HVAC running for 2 weeks before you do any of this stuff, but they don't.
Yep.
And so then it culminates into this toxic soup, and then the family moves in, and it's just the absolute worst time to be in that house.
100%. And also, I think a lot of these products get wet, right? When they're doing, you know, you go buy a house when it's being built, you see before your Tyvek or your, you know, sheathing or anything goes up, they'll have the product laying on the ground and then they'll put it up and you'll have no cover, no roof protecting your building envelope. I mean, I don't have to tell you, so you know. We all know what happens, but no, it's keeping things dry and making sure these products don't get wet and don't experience any kind of dampness is key to keeping them from outgassing and causing a problem. Because I think once they become wet, now you've got an issue. It doesn't seem they, like I look at basements all the time and they say, well, why does my basement smell so bad? You'll go into like an OSB or MDF house and it won't have an odor because it's been extremely dry just from freak of nature, the way it was built, it didn't get exposed to it. Right. And then you'll go into a house that has it and the people are sick, the occupants are sick, somebody's got a complaint that it smells, and it does because it's damp all the time. And even when we try to dry it out, I mean, even when we use like, you know, we're going with the top of the line, really heavy duty commercial dehumidifiers, like whole house dehumidification, it's still really impossible to get rid of that dampness. It sort of does something to the wood. That's why I'm a plywood girl and I don't want to build with it.
Well, and that makes sense, because in a lot of parts of the country too, it's building code that you have to have a vapor barrier on the inside of the installation. So if that moisture is locked in that cavity wall, you can use the best dehumidifier in the world. You're not pulling that moisture out, but that smell will still come out through the cracks and crevices and so forth. And yeah, it's hugely problematic.
You know, what's funny. I don't know who did it. It was it was Rockwool or one of these companies. And maybe you saw this, but I deal a lot with energy recovery ventilators, and those are ventilation systems for, you know, if your audience knows or doesn't know, there's ERVs and HRVs, and we use these to transfer air from one space to another, change pressure, try to make the air cleaner. But they did this study where they were using ERVs and they were bringing air in, and it created a balloon. So where you have your, on the outside of your building envelope, you've got let's say you have Tyvek or something, you've got a vapor barrier. So it blew it up it started as they brought in positive pressure, which is supposed to be good. It created this balloon effect, and it popped it off all of the MDF, plywood, whatever you had under the, and literally created this balloon. And all this moisture started getting in and causing mold growth. It was wild. So here you're doing something for indoor air quality where you're bringing in positive air, trying to bring in fresh air, and you create this whole mold issue just because of the way we build now with all these types of, you know, Tyvek and stuff like that. That's why I traditionally go with like a felt, you know, when I'm recommending people to build. And I don't know how you feel about house wraps and things like that, but even though it's an asphalt product,
right,
I find that it does a lot better to use a felt material than a Tyvek or...
My thought on things like that, I'm not a fan of building wraps in general. If I use one, I typically use like a Sega wrap, just because we know it still will transfer vapor, but it's a positive lock. We use the peel and stick. You know, the biggest problem I have with building wraps is the installation of them if it's not done perfectly, what happens is in the week between that getting done and the cider coming in is we get, you know, wind-driven rainstorm. And it's now
game over.
Yeah, exactly. And so we typically recommend like a zip wall system or the Sega wrap. I think all in all, it comes down to quality of installation. There's a lot of parts of the country that Huber doesn't have good representation. So the contractors don't down there don't know how to use their products properly. So then I tell them, stay away. I want you to use products that you're comfortable with, that you know how to use really well. And let's just do a really good job of it. But then also be mindful. And I have for just about every home that I'm building across the country now, I think every one of these clients has now purchased a pin moisture meter so they can go onto the job site, make sure awesome. That, you know, it's okay for them to hang drywall and it's okay for them to put, you know, do the next step because they know locking in moisture is going to cause so many problems down the road.
Isn't that cool? But it's amazing. Like when people say, oh, I just want to go to one person and have them do my house. Right. And obviously from a client standpoint, it would be so easy, but there's all these pieces to this puzzle now, and it's getting bigger for us. Like we're talking about indoor air quality and how that affects a building envelope or your vapor barrier. I mean, who would think, right? That somebody goes to put an ERV in and now all of a sudden it's creating an interior problem with the vapor barrier, pushing it off of your plywood and causing moisture to be able to creep in. So it's so complex what we deal with. And I think Andy and I do a really good job of trying to navigate that whole big pie that we're, you know, given. It's just huge. And now with more products becoming available and there really aren't regulations. And we talk about this a lot in the building industry. I mean, you can put anything in a building. I mean,
for sure.
You know, there's nobody sitting there and people think, oh, well, they're selling it. It must be safe. Well, it's not.
That's funny.
Yeah. You know, what? It's at one of the big box makers. What do you mean it's not safe? And I'm like, well, I mean, and then safe is relative, right? So, you know, it's what's safe to you, maybe formaldehyde you can tolerate, even though it's a carcinogen, some people can't. So that makes our lives like crazy.
It does. And, you know, Jay, one of the experts that you and I know very well that we used to do a lot of work with, he's still a customer of mine, John Bauer.
Oh, John, he's been around forever.
He has been around forever. And you know,
he's like the godfather of us.
He is. And I actually, I still talk to him every once in a while. He is a photographer. He's enjoying his life of anonymity. Honestly, he got burned out and he, unfortunately, in our business, we deal with a lot of people who have some serious health concerns. And when things don't work the way they're planned, they're looking for a reason. And unfortunately, too many times, John was the reason because he wrote a book on how to build a healthy house and people followed his instructions to the T and they couldn't live in those homes and they thought it was John's fault.
Right.
Which is just horrible. He and his wife gave their life to this business and they really are the innovators of our industry. And if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing, but he was the scapegoat, unfortunately. We've got to be very careful on the things we recommend.
Didn't I hear that there's some talk of Paula doing another edition of Prescriptions for a Healthy House?
Yes. Yeah. She does update it every so often.
Okay.
And that's the other thing is that you write a book and by the time it gets published, it's already out of date.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so,
That was back in the days when that's how you communicated.
Now it's like, we're changing so quickly. I mean, everything changes. You go to the building show. I mean, we're constantly, the technology's changing,
right?
You know, there's smart houses and what I try to encourage people to do is look at just because, and you agree with me, just because something's green doesn't mean it's healthy.
Bingo.
Just because something, you know, black widows are health, they're animals and whatever, insects, they're out in the environment, they're not healthy. It's the same thing. Formaldehyde is a naturally occurring thing. It occurs in the trees. It occurs in wood. It doesn't make it healthy for you. Mm-hmm. And so what you have to do is kind of, I mean, I really believe this, is that you need to balance. It's all balancing act.
Right.
So you're going to have a little here, you're going to have a little here, but you don't want to see all these peaks and valleys of bad things. And sensor systems like TVOC sensors. I was just in a conversation with Panasonic the other day and it was really interesting because these sensors really provide so much great data. They may not be the most accurate, and people say, oh, is it going to put you out of work? Are you never going to have a job? No, because they're not investigators. They're not going to go in there and turn over everything to kind of see what's happening, but they give you a good understanding. So I tell people, get a monitor, get a TVOC monitor.
Right.
And we were talking about garages and attached garages, which is just like a simple concept. But he was talking about when you brought your car into the garage, that TVOC monitor will stay elevated for 8 hours, 10 hours after you bring in power equipment, lawnmowers, cars, whatever, maybe you're bringing in a chainsaw. So a lot of these things we do to ourselves, and like you can't always look at the building and say it's the building's fault, because as humans, we do stupid stuff. I mean, I do it sometimes too. Like I'll do something, I'm like, why did I do that? It's just habit. Your mother, your grandmother told your great grandmother, told your mother. And then all of a sudden you're doing it. Right? So we do stupid stuff and we bring stuff in, and it's a matter of being balanced and saying, is this really important that I have this here? You know, can I have an attached garage? What can I do? Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people get panicked that they're going to not create this perfect environment. And there isn't one. I mean, I've tested 30,000 houses in my career. That's a lot of houses.
Yep.
And when people say, I'm going to move to Pahrump, Nevada, and I'm going to have no chemicals and I'm going to live in the middle of nowhere, guess what? They still have 250 volatiles in their space. Yep. You can't get away from it, because we are, as a petroleum society, we carry this with us all the time. We share things. We're a community. Look at COVID. It's a perfect example. Mm-hmm. We share. You know, if you go around a cat or a dog, and then you go around someone, you bring cat or dog with you. Somebody opens a can of peanut butter, you bring a peanut butter protein that comes in. Someone who has a peanut allergy has a massive anaphylaxis reaction. Mm-hmm. So it's all of this sharing. And that's why it's important that Andy and I and Jay do shows like this, because we need to explain to you that you can be doing everything you can. You're not an individual. No matter what you do, if your neighbor's doing something or somebody else is doing something, we're all exposed. And until we get in a community, frame of thought where we're all realizing, hey, I've got to watch. I can't use glyphosate anymore because my neighbor's getting cancer and I did it. My neighbor's contaminated and I've tested these homes. I mean, I've tested glyphosate. I was one of the first ones in the country ever to test glyphosate and find it in ductwork on a filter. So, and we presented this information and, you know, they went to court and look, Monsanto or Bayer actually, they just stopped making Roundup for residential. That was the news like last week. So these are huge things. Like as a community, these small grassroots we can do stuff, you know, Andy, what we do is so important and it makes a difference for sure.
I wanted to ask about, Andy, you were alluding to it earlier when you were talking about construction and doing it right and people knowing how to use the right product. So I want to hear you both talk about this one, because we know in the continuum at the end of this day, when you're talking about all the remediation and other things that need to be done, you also have to include who's going to do it. And so I'm interested in your thinking, Caroline, you too, Andy, and we've talked about this a lot. What do you tell a client when they say, okay, I love what you're telling me to do. Now, how do I get it done? Who do I talk to? How do I vet a contractor or a contracting team to do what we need to do? So how do you do that? Because I get asked that question all the time. Hey, I need someone to come and use your products. Do you know anybody? And I'm at a little bit of a disadvantage because I sell through a network of dealers, and I have to kind of go back to the dealer and say, go to my dealer and ask them if they have a list of contractors they've worked with or the contractors they know of who can do the work the right way it needs to be done without debate. So Andy, go ahead.
I'll let Andy go first and then I'll go after he goes.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good question, Jay. So that when somebody asks me that, I usually say that let's look at a whole house situation. If somebody's looking to build an entirely new home or do a large remodeling, the first question they ask me is, are there any green contractors in the area? And I said, yeah, there are, but I don't work with any of them.
That's funny.
And the reason for that is kind of what Caroline was just talking about before, is that there's so much technology out there in the green building industry, quote unquote, that a lot of the green builders they succumb to the desire to be high tech, high performance. Everything's got to be monitored through computer systems. And, you know, I mean, they want to run these houses by the touch of a button, but at the end of the day, that doesn't make a home healthy.
Correct.
And green builders, generally speaking, are very, very difficult to convince what they are doing might actually be more dangerous. You know, look at the idea of what you mentioned before with an HRV and turning it into this situation where the home is blowing up. Why are we in that situation? Because of high performance screen builders saying that we have to build super tight. That's why we have this problem.
And I think they're coming around though. Like, you know, we had, like I was speaking with Panasonic and they get it. So they're talking about an umbrella, right? And having an umbrella policy where all of these things are now encompassing. So we realize that zero energy has failed tremendously. I mean, I was never a proponent of it to begin with, but I think it's but at the same time, we don't want to be putting a high carbon footprint, right? We want to be creating some of these things. So how do we do it? And again, it comes back to that moderation. I think you don't want to do too much, but there's some great smart thermostats. Look, I'm a big fan of the Ecobee. Okay. And people will say, why? Well, there's a lot of reasons. You can control your energy efficiency really easily without having to do anything like adding petroleum. And a lot of these people who want to build healthy, you don't want to be overrunning your HVAC. You don't want to overuse gas. You don't want to overuse oil. So monitoring a thermostat like that can work great. So it's finding the positive. There's a positive, negative in everything. And so it's kind of weighing them out and seeing which one is more prevalent. And if the positive outweighs a slight negative, I'll use it. Right. And that's always led me to, you know, just using your mind. And I think you're the same way, like thinking for yourself and being able to say, okay, this makes sense. It doesn't.
Well, that's using common sense, which we all know in our industry is not very common. And so,
hence why we're still around for many, many years.
Exactly. And so you're exactly right though. It's moderation. I tell all my clients, we're not looking for perfection. Mm-mm. You know, you will drive yourself to the poorhouse or the nut house trying to be perfect. It will not happen. We want tolerance. We want our clients to be able to tolerate the home they live in and thrive, but don't strive for perfection. You'll never get there. And the green building industry, you know, when this industry really took off, I started in 91, 92, USGBC started in 95, 96. Yep. Lead didn't get brought out until 98, 99. Is at that time when the industry coined itself as the green building industry, and it was all based on metrics. Mm-hmm. And when you base construction on metrics, it leaves no room for real life situations, job site situations. It leaves very little room for common sense. It has to meet this or not meet it. It's a pass fail. And in a home, all too often, you would like to do things based upon what the metrics tell you should do. But sometimes you have to make that, you know, that game time job site decision for the health of an occupant. And you know, it's like using a certain type of, you know, I'm not a huge fan of using plastics in homes, but sometimes we use Corian for countertops because that is the least likely to be problematic for someone with extreme chemical sensitivity. And because if they use natural stone, you've got to put a toxic sealer on it and that'd be more problematic. So sometimes you got to take that step backwards to take two steps forwards, and that doesn't meet the metric that the industry put together for itself. And so it's a dance. You have to, you know, dance around and make sure that not only does it meet the standards of the industry from, for building code and energy code and fire code, but also for the health of the occupants and the sanity of the occupants.
And we're
placed in their wallet.
Right. And we're placed in a rock and a hard place because code dictates to us what Andy and I can do. And there's nothing we can do. I mean, obviously I sit on lots of boards. I've sat on the Indoor Air Quality Association board. I've been their keynote speaker. I've sit on the ACAC board. And these are places where we use our power to try to navigate and make a better world. Right. But from a standpoint of, you know, on a day-to-day, are we going to be able to change those things? We can't. So we've got to be really creative and we've got to know our products and we've got to know what is out there because there's a lot of alternatives. It's like wood is a perfect example. Windows and doors create a lot of issues with people with chemical sensitivity. And I've got my favorite windows and doors that I like for my clients. And they usually say, well, that's got a vinyl window to it. I'm like, yeah, but I'm telling you, you're not going to react to it. Like, it's good. You know what I mean? And a lot of the woods, they use preservatives. They've got PVC in there, very aromatic things that I know they're never going to be able to tolerate. So it's like, sometimes you just have to trust us, like, to know that we actually have, you know, 20, 30 years experience that right. some things may not physically make sense on the, when you're looking at it, but it works. Right. And they don't right. have a reaction to it. So
it's hard to tell. I mean, it's easy to tell a customer, just use it, 'cause I know it works.
Right.
When they say, well, explain, please.
I don't know. It just doesn't smell. Like, it doesn't have an odor. Yeah. And all these families before you have been able to tolerate it, which is, there is something to be said about that, right? We have there a lot is. Of like trial and error. So
right.
I know
right.
things that work and don't. And I do it with my house. Like, let's tell a story, because we'll talk about, I called Andy. I like telling my own story because all it right. was interesting.
Well, yeah, so, I think this is a good time. I want to hear stories. I think you know, this is where, you know, we get the down and dirty and the lowdown. So yeah, let's hear it.
So I called Andy. I had been doing a project with windows and doors, and I was putting in two sliders. So I wanted to extend the back of my house, so we had a slider after slider. So they came and I ordered the slider, and they were putting it in. And I, on the same day that the slider was going in, do you remember this? I was making maple sausage. I'd gone to this yes. farm stand to pick up maple sausage, which is something I would never eat. I mean, I like sausage. I like maple syrup, but never combining it together in the house is not something that I would ever do, right? So I make this maple sausage. At the same time, the door's going in. So now it's like 2 days later, and it smells like a barista in the house. Like, it smells like this, like, Starbucks kind of caramel coffee sweet smell. And I smell down in the drain, like in the vent fan from the stove. And I'm like, oh, it smells like maple syrup in there. It smells like this smell, right, coming up. I'm like, oh, must have been from cooking that sausage. The sausage must have been greasy, and it must have somehow tainted the, I thought we left the fan. The fan has a filter. I thought we left the filter out, right?
Right.
I'm like, son of a gun. So we're down in the garage, taking apart this whole fan, all the piping that goes out to the outside, cleaning it out. The thing stinks. I'm like, oh my God, I can't get this out. I keep smelling it and smelling it. I'm like, this is crazy. I went and got a new cooktop because it was so bad. I thought that it was embedded. Now, there was a portion of it embedded in this. Okay. Replace everything. I'm like, holy shit. Sorry. Am I allowed to say that? I don't know if I'm allowed to say that, but I just said it anyway. So I'm like, why is it still smelling like a barista? Now, this is like a month gone by. And when I tell you, it smelled like sweet coffee, caramel in a cup. So I walk in, I'm like, this is weird. And I go over by where the slider went in, and I'm like, I smell it coming out of here somewhere. I'm like, this is strange. I called my contractor and I said, look, something's going on. I smell this weird smell. I don't know what it is. Everybody smells it. It's not like I was just smelling it. It smells like a coffee cup. Fast forward, it was the insulation. Yep. The insulation that we put in had not, or had been overbaked. So sometimes you can get an underbaked situation with a fiberglass batting insulation. You can get an overbake. In this case, we got an overbake. And I don't know what made me call the company, but I was on a bunch of support groups, and I'm like, I'm smelling something. And somehow I, you know, came upon it, Andy. I don't even know how. And sure enough, it was the insulation. It had gone bad. They had overcooked it. And I talked to the company. And I said, look, this is what's going on. They're like, you're going to have to pull everything out. It's all going to come out. It's defective. Wow. So here, like, what I'm saying is, we're building professionals. We do this. I mean, I picked the best products to go in. I picked the best doors. I picked what I like. Mm-hmm. And I was totally blown out of the water. Like, it just was a skunk product. And I've seen this happen with paint. Paint can go bad. You'll get a yeasty smell coming off paint. And I've had my clients paint the whole house, and they're like sick. They can't handle it.
Right.
And it's nothing they did. It's just a bunk product.
So the sausage cooking was just a coincidental thing.
It was a coincidence completely.
Right. And it threw us both for a loop, because, you know, that I remember that story. I'm thinking, okay, so this smell is not going away. What was the additive in this sausage? I mean, I'm thinking of chemistry of this and that. The fact that the insulation was overbaked never crossed my mind. Mm-mm.
Wow. And how could it? Yeah. And my contractors thought I was nuts, right? So they're like, oh, forget it. You know, whatever. We'll come take it out. So they open up the cavity. So when it was in a cantilever, right? So they had put the insulation up, and then they had put plywood, and it was like an overhang situation. So they go to pull it out, they open it up, and they get hit in the face with this. They're like, holy cow. They're like, this stinks. I said, I told you, the whole house smelled. And what was happening was, the cantilever and where the stove go out, right? It mm-hmm. was picking up the air and it was pulling some of that just naturally in through
sure.
the return for the stove. And so that's why you were smelling it. I mean, it there was like sausage and stuff in there, but it was predominantly from the insulation.
Unbelievable. Well, it's amazing that you found the actual culprit, because yeah. how often do we do these things and we never actually find the culprit? You know, I learned this on a on job sites years ago, that somebody has a roof leak and you can send your experts up into the roof and never find the roof leak at all. And the only thing that solves it is just tearing it off and put it on a new roof.
But you know what helps? So, and this is true for all of your, I think this is imperative that anyone who's listening to this show would know this. When you keep things simpler and you really do know your products that are going in, it becomes a lot easier. And you know this, to ascertain yeah. where the problem's coming from. When you start to get people in there and they're using 10 different types of caulk and they're using 15 different paints, and then they're using a stain mm-hmm. on top of it. When I do my projects in my home, I'm very systematic as to how I do things, just because I want to know, okay, this is going well, this is going well. Because I know in building, there's room for error. I mean, you just have to account for, there could be a contractor error, there could be a product error. So you want to make sure those things get done well, and you do them in a pace where you're like, okay. And so that's how we were able to put it together. We're like, well, the door was there forever, right? The door didn't have an odor to it. We didn't smell anything. What else did we put in? And then we started thinking, was it the HVAC? Because we had done some HVAC stuff. And then we tried to piece it together and we figured it out. I mean, it took about a month, but, and it was an easy fix, thank God. I mean, I almost said the name of the company and I don't want to bash them, but they paid to have everything taken out. And, nice. But you know, it's just a headache. I mean, you know,
oh yeah, you got a headache and it's a head scratcher, but now we know.
Yeah.
And right. So if anybody ever has that,
barista
sausage,
right. Yeah.
Smell in their house.
Caramel macchiato is what it smells like.
Yeah, I was so just going to ask you, are you going to cook that sausage again? I don't know.
No, I will never.
Never yeah, again, yeah. No.
Yep.
But it was so mixed, you know, it just smelled like sweet coffee. And that's what it is. They actually put a sugar compound. They took the formaldehyde out of a lot yep. of these insulations now, and they use a sugar. It's like a sugar based.
Right.
And when they cook it in the oven, it's really easy for it to get burned. Sounds wow. like an easy bake oven.
Right? Yeah, right. Exactly. Crazy. Oh my gosh. That's something, you know, It kind of reminds me of another situation we had with insulation, and we'll probably have to, you know, talk about other things on another show. But we had a situation a few years back where somebody moved into a home that had just been re-insulated with spray foam. Mm. And I'd kind of like to get your opinion on spray foam, because I'm yeah. Okay. That's well, about my you. Opinion too. So, this person went through hell and back, still dealing with it today. They tried to seal it. Jay, you know, you guys make the Safe Seal.
Safe Seal, yeah.
You know, Safe Seal is great, but if Safe Seal doesn't work, then you know you got a real problem on your hands.
You got an issue.
Exactly. It got to the point where the only way he could get rid of that toxic off-gassing was to tear out all the insulation. He mm-hmm. had to have the wood ice blasted, mm-hmm. you know, with what they mm-hmm. do to freeze mm-hmm. it and scrape it out. And then he put on three coats of AFM's got a product called Polyuracil, which is designed for hardwood flooring, but it happens to be their absolute best chemical sealer. And it that did take care of the problem eventually, but at the cost of $40,000-$50,000.
No. Mm. And it doesn't, and people think, you know, you have to be somebody who's chemically sensitive for this to happen to. No. And it's not. Mm-hmm. You know, if this happens to healthy people, healthy kids, healthy families, I mean, mm-hmm. you don't need to be chemically sensitive to have an issue. I mean, no. Look, I didn't have an issue with the insulation. It wasn't making me sick. It just was making my house smell like it shouldn't, you know, right. And I know your mm-hmm. house shouldn't smell like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, and eventually, I think eventually it turns into probably feeling almost like physically sick because
you don't want to smell it, right? It's right. Just like exactly. It gives you that, you know, it's just you don't want to smell barista every day.
No, you don't. That's unless you're a Starbucks.
Yeah. Can you imagine? Yeah. These people work in it every day. So we shouldn't. Even.
They don't
notice care.
It. They don't right. smell it.
They're young kids, right? Half of them. Are like,
right. So what's the future hold for you?
Let's see. Well, there's so much going on because of COVID. I mean, I've really been pushed into the COVID cure, the COVID, what's the next thing? I never expected to. I mean, right. it threw us all for a loop. It's still coming. I'm concerned about the Lambda variant, which is behind the Delta variant, which we're not really talking about now. But I think it's here to stay. I think to find something interesting about COVID, and, you know, I don't know how much you know, but they did studies now on white-tailed deer, especially in the Northeast, and we know that SARS-CoV-2 has transmitted to the deer population.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I see a lot of people getting up in arms, you know, they're angry. Oh, you should get the vaccine. You shouldn't get the vaccine. You should get the vaccine. And we're fighting amongst each other, which to me is just, I mean, it's not productive, people. Like, I'm sorry. And, you know, I can give my opinion. I've spent over 20 years in this industry of indoor air quality. We are not accomplishing anything by doing this. With that being said, I think, you know, you can vaccinate the entire population, but if the animals have it, what are you going to do?
Exactly.
It's out there. Okay. We know, and a lot of people don't know this information. So when I tell my clients, like the last, this has been recent that it's come out, it flips them out because they're like, oh my God, I just want to see an end to this. I want it to end. And so we all do, but I think this is going to teach us a lesson. And if you look at things like cholera and disease states where they were directly impacted with environment, right? So cholera happened because we had a lot of sewage being mixed with drinking water, right? We had this contamination, so people got sick. I feel that COVID, and this is just my opinion, and I don't need people sending me emails if they get mad or whatever, but I feel that COVID-19 is going to be the lesson learned with environmental indoor air quality. This is a disease state that is enhanced dramatically by having a lot of people in a congested space,
right?
Which means that you are going to have to address indoor air quality to deal with this. I mean, whether it's this disease state or anything else that we deal with anthrax or other biologicals, right? We're going to have to change environmentally how we look at it. There's no fighting it. Right. A vaccine, in my opinion, isn't going to do it. I'm not saying not to get vaccinated. That's right. Not what I'm saying. I'm saying right. That with it being out in the animal populace the way it is, how do you stop it? You know, you can't vaccinate right. Every animal.
Well, that's the big difference. And people try to compare this to, you know, smallpox. You can't. Smallpox never jumped to animals.
Correct.
And so that's why we're able to get rid of it.
That's right. So with that being said, I think that there's a tremendous technology out now, which is integrated viral protection, which I got behind the company when I saw the technology coming out of Texas. And I don't know if you see me on LinkedIn, you see me talk mm-hmm. about it.
Oh yeah.
And I love this technology. It's heated HEPA filtration. So what it is it's a heated technology where it's getting up to 400 degrees and with a HEPA filter. Now, how cool is this? From a lot of different standpoints, it was originally designed strictly like for COVID. They tested it at Galveston National Laboratory against anthrax and actual COVID. So just for your listeners, when people say to you that they've put in a technology that works against COVID, the first question you need to ask is, did they test it against actual COVID or did they test it against a COVID-like substance? And most of them have been tested against a COVID-like substance. But with this company and why the technology is expensive is they went to Galveston National Lab and put this thing up against real time, you know, COVID-19 or SARS-CoV-2. And they also used it in medical facilities and took actual real COVID patients where they were dispersing COVID, you know, or SARS-CoV-2 into the air and cleaned up the air with it. So with this technology, it gets really hot. Anything that comes into it, it's a 400 degree temp, basically is eradicated. So from our perspective, Andy, just from you and I, like allergies, chemical compounds, it's amazing to me because this is like heating stuff up and burning it, which is right. To me, you know, everybody says, well, there's a byproduct. Yeah, because but you're going to have a HEPA filter after that. So to me, it's a really great technology. No hydroxyls, no ozone, no carbon, no ozone. I mean, anything else that, you know, whatever you're getting in there, a lot of these purifiers, I don't like them because they put other things into the air. So if you have a purifier sitting in the corner of your room, and you trap everything in there, whether it's a volatile organic, you trap a mycotoxin, you test mold, whatever, that doesn't go away. That's still sitting there. And so when I test indoor air quality, I'll go, why isn't this patient getting better? I'm like, the air quality should be good. And these purifiers that sit there and any kind of filters the same way, that's still in the environment. So if you have cat, dog protein, peanut protein, horse protein, that's affecting you in that space. You'll sneeze, you'll cough, you'll have symptoms to it. So I like the concept of this burning it up, putting it through 400 degree temp, because now you've got something that's been inactivated. very cool technology. They have to perfect it. They've done it with portable units now. We had them at the Super Bowl, and we have big venue, like big towers that do like 50,000 square feet. And we have little purifiers that do about 2,000 square feet, but they're perfecting retrofit for HVAC, which I think is the future of everything I could ever imagine. The technology is phenomenal.
And we'll definitely link in the show notes to this, to your website. Yeah. Talk about this. It's amazing technology. One of the questions that I was thinking of was the air that comes back out of it. Is how cool does that air get before it gets expelled?
No, it's so cool. So no ambient air change. They created this. So you can go up and hug the unit. I wish I had one here, but I don't in my office. I have one in my home. You can hug it. I mean, there's no change in the air. You don't feel hot air blow out. It's amazing technology. Wow. It's an embedded mesh. So they went with a stainless steel mesh that's embedded in there. And so it just gets hot within it. The bigger issue we have with it, with HVAC, is when you put a HEPA filter on an HVAC system, it creates static pressure, right? That's always the issue. So with this, they've got to hammer out, how do we stop it from producing so much static pressure? Because anytime you put filtration on, it happens. But they're working on it, and they're working with Trane. I think they're working with Carrier, one of the other big carriers, to make it happen. And to me, it's the future. And I see it. We have the technology for portable units. I don't understand why we're not using them in schools. We've pitched to so many locations about, look, we've got this technology. It will literally clear the air of SARS-CoV-2 in 15 minutes.
Right.
Why aren't we using this? And you know, you get, oh, it's budgetary. We're using another technology, and we're like, look, that technology doesn't work. I can show you the science that this is not going to work. You don't want to put hydroxyls into your air. So I think it's time, but, it's great. I mean, honestly, not just because I think so, I just think the technology is fantastic.
Well, and I think that the technology coming out of this, and the thought coming out of this, I totally agree. At a homeowner level, people are much more aware of their own environment. Our business throughout the last 16 months has exploded because people are sitting at home looking around going, well, I should probably fix that and fix that. And as long as I'm here, if I'm going to be living in this while it's being done, I should probably do it in a healthier manner. You know, and so it's making them think about the materials that they use. And it also makes them think about, if I'm going to be subject to all these things as I live my life, I want to come home to a really clean, healthy house.
Environment. And that comes back to that community again, though. I think this made people realize that we spread things amongst each other. And it's not just COVID.
Right.
It's chemicals. It's proteins. It's gasoline. I mean, you go to a gas pump, you pump gas. You don't have to get gas on you. You just need to pump that gas, and you're covered in gasoline. Exactly. Now you go sit on your couch. Now that's in your couch. Now it's in your house. So that's how all this works. And so I think COVID has allowed people to kind of understand our perspective a little bit more and get an idea as to how these things transmit.
Well, and I think that once the political ramblings of it back and forth start to go away, it'll allow some of this to really flourish.
I hope so. It's terrible.
As you pointed out before, with, you know, jumping to animals, that means that 100% of all humans on Earth can be vaccinated and we'll still have it. Mm-hmm. There's not one viral infection that has ever gone away. It's just once it's in our environment, it's here forever. And now it's, how do we deal with it moving on? And I, you know, I had COVID myself back in November.
I know you did. It's so scary.
It knocked me out for a few weeks. But you know, I've never felt better now, and I'm loaded with antibodies. So
did you take anything, or were you able to fight it yourself, or what did you have to do?
Well, we had Dr. Naj on the show back in, was that March or April, Jay?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
When COVID was first starting, and she said, take vitamin A, vitamin D, vitamin C, and she gave us the list of I use to take and so forth. And she said, if you feel like you're coming down with something, double what you're taking. And I took her advice, and I am convinced the reason why I got through it fairly easily was because of the high amount of vitamin D.
Yeah. And studies have been showing that. I mean, I know people like to defy it, but I mean, and I'm not, I'm not going on one side or the other. People would probably find it kind of interesting what my political views are. I don't give them, but vastly different than people would probably expect. Yeah. But, you know, the studies are what the studies are, right? And so we just don't spend enough time studying a lot of these natural things because there's no money to be made in it. And people, you know.
Well, and that's why I loved her perspective on this. And she said, if people would just take away the political views and just look at the actual science,
information, data, science,
you would see this. And what you're saying right now with all these, with the technology of the purification systems, with what we're seeing and contractors now finally understanding, well, I guess what I do can impact the health of the occupant. Well, really?
Whoops. Oh, that's interesting, right? Well,
thanks for finally acknowledging that. But I think that if we could finally get to a place in this country where we just accept this, and then we can deal with it and move on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's asking a lot.
Yeah, it's an interesting time for all of us, you know?
Yeah,
it is.
So. Well, day at a time, step at a time.
Yes.
You got it. So we've been talking about having each other on our shows for about a year now. And so I squarely put this all on me because my schedule has been horrible. And I know yours is all over the board too, but every time I say, okay, I'm going to reach out and let's do this. So something happens. And so I can't tell you how happy I am to finally have you on the show. And
thank you.
And I know most people that listen to me probably already know all about you, but maybe we've exposed some new folks to you. And if anything, because of the way Jay and I like to do our show, we're a little more casual and a little more like to have a little more fun than just talk about, you know, details and so forth. Hopefully people saw the happy side of your life as well, and the fun side of you. So thank you so much.
Yeah, we talked about a lot of serious stuff. I'm actually quite a joker, and I'm quite a music. I'm a music aficionado too.
Oh,
so I'm very into. Yeah. I'm a rocker.
All
I'm
right.
A groupie. I'm. What do you guys have? I always ask people like, "What's your music genre? Like, what do you like?" So we'll go with Jay. Jay, what's your?
Well, I have to tell you that I am a rock drummer. So,
oh, yeah. See, I'm a groupie already. Jay, I'm Jay's groupie.
So I started playing when I was really young, and then, of course, different iterations of my music career. So, I've played with jazz guys, I played with rock bands. I was in an original group for a while, just doing kind of weird, kind of violent femmes kind of music, just very,
That's
very,
awesome.
Very, very eclectic kind of stuff. So, but I'm still, at heart and soul, I still like rock and, I become a big
like
jazz.
What are you like a are you a like I mean do you like Van Halen are you a
yeah
like
yeah Zeppelin, oh yeah Doors, yeah I did I would date myself completely, but I'll tell you what, one of my concert going highlight was I saw Jimi Hendrix in 1969 at Anaheim Stadium. I was in the seventh row of a Hendrix concert.
That is awesome.
So I've been a big Hendrix fan since I first heard him on an eight track cassette in my buddy's VW bus. So, none of the newer bands I haven't really paid attention. So I'm always kind of falling back to all of the ones you mentioned.
But they're all classics. I mean,
they're all great.
They're the fundamentals of the new that we have, right?
Yeah. I like blues. I like blues music, so I'm a fan. I don't know if you ever heard of. There's a guitar player. He's an old guy named Walter Trout. Walter Trout. I've sent you some of his music.
Oh, yeah.
He's one of the guys I like. It's pretty much all over the board. I'm listening now to I don't know if you know about this. This is a there's a lot of holistic work being done with sound.
Oh yeah. Isn't it incredible? A lot of drumming.
And so my wife and I have been kind of tuning into that and trying to get we're doing some exploration on how drums can help you calm down, help you sleep, all of that. So that's kind of captured my attention. The other thing I've just ordered, by the way, is I've ordered a pan drum. You know what a pan drum is?
No, what is that?
It's basically a metal drum, and it has tongues on it, and the tongues are tuned. And so you can strike them with a mallet, you can hit them with your hands, and they're tuned to different keys. And so I'm getting one of those so I can start doing a little bit of meditative drumming and incorporating rhythm with the sound to get that combination of the sonic and the rhythmic together. So I'm going to do some recordings and I'll just share them with you and see if,
oh my God, that is so cool. I started during COVID. Like I was watching, they were doing a lot of, there was somebody that was doing like a meditation with sound. Mm-hmm. I got really into it. I mean, I have a hard time sleeping because obviously Andy could probably vouch, you know, you just, right. you have so much things going running through your mind.
Right,
so
right,
I
right.
do a lot of that, like sound meditation. I like to do, I mean, I'm very into prayer. I'm very into a lot of the, I do a lot of Reiki. So things to kind of calm you. I love all that. But music, you know.
Yeah. Do you not play an instrument yourself?
I don't. I'm really bad. Like I've tried, I took piano for, I don't even know how long and I suck. I mean, I just suck at it.
Just find a drum circle and learn how to do some basic drum percussion. I mean, it's so easy. You can play on anything. You can play on a pot in your kitchen while you're cooking the maple sausage.
I'll just be your groupie, Jay. I'm just going to follow Jay around. And,
I'll send you, if I can find some old clips from my originals band, I'll send you a couple songs. You can see.
That's awesome. Oh my God. I love it. How about you, Andy? What's your jam?
Well, in high school, I was the lead singer of a heavy metal band.
Oh my God, I'm surrounded. No wonder I love these guys. I'm surrounded by musicians. I'm at home. Oh my
gosh. Very first concert that I ever went to, it was in high school, sophomore year, I saw Metallica opening up for Ozzy Osbourne.
Oh, come on. That's the best.
It was excellent. It was fantastic. And now 40 some plus years later from high school, I think on the way in this morning, I was listening to Gregorian chant.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah. It's all music. It's all rock. Doesn't matter.
Honestly, I've got, you know, Spotify and XM satellite and all that stuff. It doesn't matter what station is on. I could just blindly hit a station and I probably know the song.
See?
And I like it all. I can really relate to just about everything. There's a couple of genres that I just don't get yet. But for the most part, I can relate to anything and really get into just about anything.
That's awesome. Me too. Me too. I saw, you know, it was amazing. I saw Styx. It was the first concert back. I mean, I've obviously seen Styx before, but I went and saw them. And I'll tell you what, some of these bands, I mean, the old time stuff, they sound incredible. I mean, they sounded like they did Mr. Roboto and it was like they didn't miss a beat.
Well, so, we could have a whole show dedicated to why they're not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Oh, I know. Isn't this great? I mean, crazy. They were like, I don't know. Is your audience like, can I say things on here? I don't know.
Sure. You can say whatever. They love
it. They were like the old time rock and rollers. Like he was out there and I forget, he had like his pants on. And it was funny because like I was sitting in the way back and my friends are running up. They're like, he doesn't have any underwear on. He doesn't have any underwear. I'm like, what are you talking about? They're like, he's Commando. And I'm like, he's a 70s rocker. Like he just does it, you know? And we were just dying because it was like a big balloon fest and he's out there with his junk flying in the air, rock and roll. So well, I just have like, to say it. I'm, you know,
like being at a Tom Jones concert in the 70s. It was really no different.
I would have liked to have gone to a Tom Jones concert.
That's fantastic.
He's still making music, that guy.
Yes, he is.
He is. These guys are, I mean, look at, you know, they don't stop. And some of them, I mean, they're in fantastic shape. Like, honestly, like, I can't believe what shape they are. And then so I'm a big Guns N' Roses fan, I have to say. Mm-hmm. And so Guns N' Roses came and I had tickets to the concert. His voice is shot. I mean, Axl's not even, you know, that old. And I mean, at first he sounded like Dying Cat and then he kind of warmed up, but I was disappointed because I truly am a big Guns N' Roses fan. So,
you know, who I saw on YouTube was Paul Rogers with the band Bad Company.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. That guy looks great and he's still in voice.
Yes.
It was like, wow.
Well, fantastic. He's got a timeless voice. I mean, he's just fantastic.
It's amazing that their voice hasn't changed. I joke though with Styx. I say that they're taking stem cell and like human growth hormones. There's no way.
Seriously.
I mean, these guys look like, you know, come on.
Tommy Shaw still looks like he's 30 years old.
Oh my God. He was running around like crazy. He looked like, I mean, it was insane.
Right.
He's like a smaller guy too. So he doesn't like age. I kind of think like, I don't know. It was just.
He did a series of concerts with high school orchestras a couple years ago.
Wow.
It was just outstanding. Outstanding. Well, so, all right. On our next episode of music.
Music with
Andy.
Andy and Carolyn and Jay.
That's fantastic. Oh, that's great. All right. So I don't know where do we go from here. I guess we'll have to have you back on the show to talk about when I saw Little River Band a couple years ago.
And there you go.
That was a great show too.
Yeah. And we'll talk about how people just have to keep moving forward with their home projects. Don't expect perfection. No. Work with professionals. I mean, when you're talking to somebody like Andy or myself or Jay, I mean, you're talking to people who have substantial experience.
Yes.
And we're never trying to steer you wrong. So that is never our intention.
At the end of the day,
what
we want is, I honestly, and I say this to customers all the time, when they say, well, you know, I'll talk to you next week or I'll talk to you, some down the road.
Yeah.
I've said this to customers before. Please don't take this the wrong way, but I hope I never have to talk to you again. Because I really want your home to be good. Fixed.
Yep.
Oh, that was so much fun. Thank you, Caroline, for coming on the show. Folks, please take a look at the show notes and look at the links to her websites. Read up about what she does, where she's going to be featured next, and certainly tune into her radio program, and definitely look up information about her air purification systems. Caroline, again, thank you for being on the show, and I'm looking forward to having you back sometime in the near future. And folks, please make sure to go to iTunes and give us a rated and review if you like the show. It'll help others find wonderful people like Caroline as they find our show. So we'll talk to you again next week, folks. Take care.